Welcome to Let's Fix Things, exploring how user experience impacts the world of IoT and connected devices.
Who's good afternoon?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, it is an unusual evening session that we're doing here as opposed to our normal snappy morning banter.
Yeah.
Much like an excellent talk show radio host that we are.
Hey, I have something to confess. I didn't really prepare. I installed the Pokemon Go app.
None of us prepare for this. That's why it's exciting.
I got a Pikachu.
God damn it. I will not join in the rest of the office and doing this. I'm not gonna. You guys took like an hour at lunchtime hunting whatever the hell you're getting, Squirtles, yeah, and Charmanders and Psyducks and stuff.
It was a good lunch.
Wait, but did you get a Pikachu in the real way? No.
I just started a new account. Yeah.
So how does that work? Explain that, because you explained it to me.
Well, basically, you watch how other people play it, and then you figure out how it works. And it turns out you get a Pikachu by not getting any of the first ones. So if you just hold out a little bit while the game is running, you can just get it. And everybody else is just trying to get it. So it's not cheating.
By not playing, you're playing.
Yeah.
It's a very thinking man's game. And this game has also come under fire recently for all the data it's collecting.
Yep.
Do you still have it on your phone?
I got the Android version, so it turns out that I'm fine, but the iOS version was requesting access to your Google account.
Android doesn't do that?
It turned out to be less of the access, so the difference was in how much access it got. It didn't only get access to your Google account for identification, but it got full access. So technically, Niantic, the one who released the game, the company, was allowed to read your emails, go through your contact lists, and see anything that you can see when you're logging to your account.
Well, we brought this up before, that the amount of convenience that you get out of something, or the amount of enjoyment, you will give up certain levels of privacy in order to have that.
Yeah, in this case, you didn't have to create a new account with a new password if you had it. Yeah, just give us the password.
So, you know, 10 years ago, if you had said, hey, are we allowed to track all of your movements? People would have been like, screw you. Hell no, you're not tracking everything. But give them a little device that they put with a screen on it that they put in their pocket and carry everywhere with them. And all of a sudden, you can track them everywhere and it's absolutely fine with them. So, give me convenience or give me death. And that goes into the topic of today. Ethics and technology. This will not be all encompassing. Because we could rant for 48 hours on this, on all the different aspects of this. But it did come up from discussions around the data being collected from Pokemon Go, and also a few weeks ago, the topic of the Tesla car.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first, if people have not or were not familiar with it, the first Tesla automatic driving death occurred, unfortunately. I believe it was in the U.S. state of Florida, if I remember correctly. And then that spun a whole lot of discussion up around, you know, are driverless cars ready? And then it brought back the discussion that's been around for quite a while, which is how do you handle death and situations around death and when you have automatic vehicles or other situations like that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think in this case, the problem was that Tesla never claimed to have a fully self-driving car, right? It is more of a assisted mode. But did the driver really see it as that? Or were they just depending on the car being able to do everything itself? And is it fair to ask of a driver of a car that has an assisted mode to pay attention? Like it's his little kid driving and he has to pay attention until it makes a little mistake and then correct? Or is it fair to ask that?
And so this is, you know, we've been discussing this for the last week since we did the last podcast. But at the point, you know, people are then going after Tesla. Musk, you know, wrote sort of a little bit of a curt response to some of the detractors of, you know, self-driving cars. But then, of course, you know, the amount of deaths that a Ford or, you know, any sort of a Lexus or anything has, any car has. You know, you don't go after the car company at that point. You go after the driver. And in this case, the driver was the car company. So this is where that whole issue of, you know, who's responsible for what at what point and who should take responsibility. You've mentioned before that there was the ability, I can't remember if we've recorded this or if this was on just, you know, on the go discussions in the office. But who's responsible when your bot that you've created, you know, orders drugs online? And that was a real case.
There was this arts project. I think it was from Berlin, where they created a bot that went on the dark web to order drugs.
It ordered anything. Like, it just, like, picked up anything from the one that got closed down, Silk Road.
Yes.
Right. So it would just pick up anything from there. And then at one point it ordered drugs, and police came to the house, and the person had to explain, oh, you know, my bot did it.
Yeah. Yeah. They never told it specifically what to buy. It just went online and did it.
Once that was explained, of course, beyond confusion, the police let the person off. But then at that point, whose responsibility is it? And when it comes to ordering drugs online, that's one type of situation, but you can imagine many, many other types of situations at some points, you know, who's held responsible. And with the issue of Tesla, there's been a few different articles that have been written over the past, I would say years, probably much before that. But since the self-driving car topic came up and has been really prominent in the last few years ago, which is, if you have to kill somebody, who do you kill?
Yeah.
And this was the iRobot scene as well. For those of you who haven't seen iRobot, that set Will Smith up for disliking robots. If you are an automatic driving car and you're going down the road and you a child runs out in front of the car, and the car has two options. I'm sure there's more, but let's say in this case, there's two options. One of them is you continue going and you would hit the child. And the other is you would veer and smash into a telephone pole, potentially injuring or killing the driver. At, you know, what point, who decides the solution to that? And, there is no right answer.
No, and the thing is that a self-driving car, once they are fully self-driving, they live in this world of mathematics where it really does become a choice. The car will, before taking any physical decision, will exactly know how it's going to turn out. Of course, there's always random variables that can make this accident bigger or smaller than predicted. But in the end, the car will have to make the choice. And that's the problem.
This is sort of a Kobayashi Maru moment. And for those of you who are listening who aren't familiar with that, it was a concept introduced in, I think it was Star Trek II, but somebody can correct me, where cadets or Starfleet officers are put through training, at which point they are given an unwinnable situation. And it's meant to test how they handle an unwinnable situation or how they handle death in that type of situation. And this is more or less what companies are being faced with. And it's not purely death in this case. Tesla is one case. But just in the last few weeks, we've had several different aspects pop up. I guess if we go to 4 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago, maybe it was a little longer than that, the Apple and FBI topic.
Yeah.
And so at that point, you know, there's this big issue that the FBI said, again, if those of you listening are not familiar, there was a shooting in the U.S. in San Bernardino. The police could not get into the person's iPhone and then requested Apple build in back doors to their iPhone in order so that the FBI could access any iPhone. Of course, at that point, you're giving up personal privacy and personal security for what was being argued as the betterment of the country. And again, that comes back to, you know, from a company point of view, what do you give up? What's the ethical stance there? Is it, as people, are you willing to give up your freedom or your privacy in order to believe that you'll be safer from these situations? And what's sort of comical is we say no to those things, right? We don't want that to happen. But yet we go back 5 minutes ago, 6 minutes ago with Pokemon Go, and we're like, hell yeah, I'll give up all of that. I want to catch that Pikachu, right?
Yeah.
It seems to be all in the way you frame it. You're selectively giving up your I guess the point is you're selectively giving up your personal freedom in order to get something that you like out of it. And the other one is the choice is made for you. But the end result is the same, but people, because of the different context, seem to have these vastly different opinions on them. To that point, of course, you know, for everything that we've talked about for the last several episodes, has all been about connected products. And I don't think this is much different. You know, a connected car, networked phones, and the data that's being passed around by them. And of course, there's a lot of different connected products that also have these types of ethical situations in them. And personally, the people in our office here and what we do at Raft, we have lots of connected devices installed in our homes. I'm personally looking at a Nest Protect, a Nest Thermostat, a Nest Cam, What else do I have around here? Philips Hue lights. I have a few other types of lights floating around here. And I actually don't know the safety of these. I don't know if any of these companies have thought about the ethics of my security or my safety around how they handle my data flowing in and out. And of course, if you start to recognize when my lights are on and when my lights are off, you can start to tell when I'm home and when I'm not. So from an ethical point of view, you never hear that discussed in smart home cases. You hear it discussed with life and death situations. You hear it discussed with these larger country cases, but you don't often hear it discussed with these smaller connected devices.
Yeah, and what you have to keep in mind is that the security of your smart home is the same as the strength of a chain. It's determined by its weakest link. So I was looking up how safe are these smart devices, and it turns out that a while ago, they in the beginning of the Nest thermostat, they managed to hack the Nest thermostat. So what do you think then? Okay, these people got information on my heating pattern, so maybe they know when I'm home or not, but that's it. But that's not how it works, because they took control of the Nest thermostat that was also on the network of those people and then got actually to listen in to that network talk. So they could also see the lights and they could see anything connected to that. So the security of your home network is really determined by the weakest device on it. So the more of these devices we get, the less secure it will possibly get.
And I don't think companies are actually talking about, or I don't think even Nest, you don't hear about security and what that means if somebody gets control of your house. And there's been lots of articles written about it.
Have you seen Mr. Robot?
I have not seen the newest season. I'm waiting for it all to come out so I can binge watch.
Yeah, I just saw episode 2 where they took over the control of a house of a woman, where they turned up the heat, turned down the heat, and turned on the music, and the TV went on and off to get her to go out of the house. And the moment she was out, she called the company to try and repair it. And they said, we can come next week. And then the guys took over her house. So something as simple as that. Once they can take control, all kinds of weird scenarios can happen.
Over the past week or 2 weeks, I've listened to 2 podcasts that have been great. I mean, one of them, Security Now, which goes through security. And it was quite an old episode from that one about the IoT space. And he talked about Bitdefender doing breakdowns of the security of different baby monitors and actually just how poor the security of these baby monitors are. And these are baby monitors that are placed in relatively sensitive areas, right? You don't place a baby monitor monitoring your front porch. You know, you generally place them in a bedroom or, you know, obviously as it sounds, with your child. And again, if these companies will parade that it has, you know, end-to-end encryption and these types of things, and they tore it apart just as by simply being incorrect. So again, from an ethical point of view, do these companies, I bought my Nest Cam, but I don't know if it's secure or not. I mean, I honestly don't know if it's secure. I've never read any reviews of it. It faces my living room. Should I be mad at myself, at Google, if someone hacks into it? Is that just a natural progression of technology that everything's going to be hackable eventually? And so why even have the discussion like that? And
I bet that Barbie with a Wi-Fi camera in it is very secure.
Oh, God.
And you definitely download updates for that every week.
Yeah, that's another thing, right? So you get a baby monitor in a camera. How many of the people are buying these are going to be like, oh, yeah, let me go and update that firmware on my baby monitor. Oh, that's exactly what I'm going to do this weekend. Like, no.
No, but devices didn't used to have to be updated.
No.
They broke or you got a new one because it had better features, but updating is something entirely new.
No, so you have a ton of connected devices. We've said it before where the devices themselves will oftentimes, you know, you have a refrigerator that is supposed to last for 15 years and the connectivity in it lasts for 5 years. You have light bulbs that will last for 20 years. The connectivity in it will last for 5 years. Now at this point, we're talking about you have products before that weren't connected that were perfectly safe because all it was a local signal of a video or simply a radio of a sound. Now you have all these great connected devices that are potentially not only less safe to the individual device, but to the actual network of your home. From an ethical point of view, we didn't have, like, people took so much more responsibility before. I mean, especially coming from the US, where if anything happened with a device, you know, you caught your finger in the refrigerator and you would sue somebody. And all of a sudden you have devices getting thrown up on Kickstarter that no one's monitoring the security of these things. And the companies themselves, in my opinion, should have an ethical responsibility to actually provide security. Like, what's the point if you're going to sell something that goes into an intimate place in your home, a bedroom, a baby's room, something like that? You know, you shouldn't be parading it around, just assuming that people will want to update the firmware every week.
Yeah. To take this discussion back to Pokemon Go, for instance.
God damn it.
Yeah. It's going to be about that all day. Now, in South Korea, there's actually a large part of the country that is not able to play Pokemon Go there because the South Korean government has made that map inaccessible because of military bases and information that they basically don't want to be available publicly. And there's a little town that's just outside of this safe zone, which the past weekend saw lots and lots of new visitors and new businesses are popping around. Even young kids are offering services to walk around with your phone for you to hatch your Pokemon.
You had reports of, I don't know if this was true or not, where people were dropping lures and then, you know, basically robbing people when they came to collect Pokemon.
Yep.
And, you know, again, is that the game's problem or is that people's problem? That one's unclear to me. I feel like companies need to have a much better ethical policy around the security of their devices. But when it comes to games like that and dropping a lure, I almost feel it's like, you know, I have a car and I got in it drunk and I hit somebody. And, you know, again, it's not Ford's, Skoda's problem. It's not VW's problem. It's the person who did it.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's this guy right now who's trying to prosecute Niantic for making his house into a Pokestop, meaning that kids and adults that play it alike, they're hanging around his house. And he is saying that Niantic is making people trespass into his garden and wherever. And he's trying to build a legal case. And if he succeeds, can you imagine what would happen?
Yeah, that just seems like so. I mean, I'd be pissed if I were him too, but at that point, it's... I remember something from years and years ago on Craigslist where somebody put in a post on Craigslist that was like, house party at this place at this time. And of course, there was no house party, just a lot of people showed up. I believe they caused some damage to the house, but are you going to blame Craigslist from that? It's like, are you going to blame newspapers for advertising in it? So that type of situation, you know, I understand how people would question the ethics of it, but I don't think that that is nearly as problematic as connected device companies shipping without security. As potentially the Tesla issue when there's a no-win situation, how do you handle it? Those to me are much more questions that call into ethics or from the point of view of the FBI and Apple of what's Apple's code of ethics on this and how are they protecting their users and how are they protecting people. Back to connected devices then, again, okay, so like I said, I have all these different cameras, I have these lights, and a while ago, I had gotten into wearables for a while, a few years ago, and I did the Nike Run Fitness, the little, whatever that was that you put in your shoe. I did
foot
that
pod.
For, huh?
Yeah, the little Nike foot pod.
Yeah, that was a... And then I got the Fitbit, which probably about... 4 months later, I think I lost at a heavy metal festival, and I didn't even notice. That's how much I never used it, so I should tell you my thoughts on wearables, and I think I stopped after that. I think there was one more wearable I had that was like a step counter. There's the Nike Run app on my iPhone, all those different types of things. So there's also, and there's been talk of people hacking. There's a theoretical hack of the Fitbit, so that when you plugged it in, they would install malware in your computer.
Yeah, and even the Nike Plus FootPod you were talking about, there's a guy who did an arts project a couple of years ago. David Chatting, what he did was he built a small computer that was able to track these devices because it turned out, which people who bought it didn't know, the device sent out little signals that your phone would pick up. But those signals also contained its ID number. So he basically set something up in the park and he could start to recognize people when they were there and he could start to recognize their walking routes. And your little Nike FootPod was just broadcasting this. The people who were running didn't know, but the guy knew, and he could make a little map of when they were there.
Companies seem to be in a race to get these connected devices, these pieces of software, these hardware components out so quickly that they are ignoring fundamentals of security that you would never expect from software, the giants like Google, Microsoft, Apple. Yes, those companies have zero-day hacks in them. Yes, there's always going to be vulnerabilities, but it seems at this moment that they are becoming vulnerabilities at a much higher rate. you know, at a much more personal level when they get into your house. And companies are not holding themselves at this point. This is the ethical thing, that companies are not holding themselves accountable for the type of data that they are creating, the type of data they are transmitting, the security around that data, and what that data potentially means for people outside me as an individual.
Yeah, but can you even expect that of these small companies? You can't expect every company to have security experts working around the clock. What if the vulnerability is not in the code that you created, but in some part that you used? What if it's the base of Bluetooth that is not good, or a piece of code that you got from somewhere?
All right, well, okay, so if it's a Bluetooth issue, then no, it's not your fault at that point. Or okay, yeah, it's not your fault, but yeah, I'm sorry. If you're going to put out a connected product that goes into somebody's home, you should have somebody with you know, knowledge of security working on that. Because otherwise, what I do believe that there is an ethical responsibility. There's just you know, a personal responsibility that what you're selling people does not put them at risk. It's you know, yes, you could argue that people who sell knives, you know, could be blamed if someone trips and falls on it and, you know, skewers themselves.
Yeah.
But I think these are a little bit different, because at least with a knife, you know it's dangerous. These things, you're assuming they're safe.
I just love to say this in the office, like when we're doing our work as well. It might not be your fault, but it is your problem, right? So as a company, you integrated a part that you don't have under your control. If that part is broken and therefore creates a dangerous product, it is your problem to solve it.
It's your product. You should solve it. Yeah, it's... I mean, that's why this is a topic we could rant for 48 hours on, right? There's just so, I mean, we've hit on all these different things and just jumped through them. But you know, going back to the wearables aspect of, you know, my Fitbit can translate stuff to my computer, which then can get on my Wi-Fi network and can get in my house. Oh my God, you know, there's so many things there. But there's other things with the data that that's being collected that could be harmful.
Yeah, there's companies that would love to get their hands on your data. The insurance companies.
For something like a Fitbit.
Yeah.
Or, well, I guess you could even put it on cameras and see how much I'm eating or what I'm eating, or put it on my connected pan and see what I'm cooking, right? If I'm cooking spinach, hooray, I'm healthy. Cooking bacon, yeah.
Right?
Yep. Premiums go up.
And you know, all of these companies like Apple and Google have been in discussions with those insurance companies for seeing what kind of data they can provide them with.
We've worked with wearables that are, you know, talking to insurance companies. And yeah, that point, whose responsibility? Like, I thought I was just keeping myself healthy, and why all of a sudden is somebody watching me? There's companies that are discussing providing fitness trackers for their employees to then help them with, you know, insurance premiums. And that just seems invasive. That seems, from a company perspective, you're being a little bit invasive into my personal space, you know, that... Maybe I can, for me personally, I look in shape, but I can't run 2 kilometers. I mean, I probably could if you really, like, you know, started, you know, following me or chased me with a knife, or, you know, if there's a chainsaw dude chasing me. But otherwise, on my own volition, I'm not going to run 2 kilometers without stopping and, you know, grabbing a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
So you know, somebody else who may look slightly more out of shape maybe could be running 10 kilometers with absolutely no problem. So there are a little bit of issues with what happens when you just base it, you know, base insurance numbers totally off metrics.
Yeah, and I think they can totally get a foot in the door by offering you a discount. But is it a real discount, or are the prices just getting higher and you're keeping at the same level?
You mean my old normal premium is a discounted premium because everyone else's goes up? People who are less healthy subsidize those who are more healthy. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great service model for insurance companies. There's also the issue of, you know, insurance on self-driving cars. Then in that case, you know, do the insurance premiums go down? Do they exist at all in 20 years if all our cars are self-driving?
Yeah.
So where does that leave us from a personal health point of view?
Yeah. I always see insurance as a bet between the insurance company and the person getting the insurance. And the more information the insurance company is getting, the more they can cheat on that bet. So,
but let me flip it around. Well, I mean... What if I wanted to provide, me personally, I can't run, but I think I'm, well, except for my back, which is now in horrible shape, I'm a pretty healthy person. What if I wanted to submit my data to a company because they said, you can get a discount. We'll give you €5 off. Well, that's not much. We'll give you €50 off your premium every month if you submit data and you have gone to the gym 3 times a week for 60 minutes, you know, at that point. So that's the Pokemon Go aspect, right? Mm-hmm. I got something I wanted. I save money. I can get 50 more euros to go out and you know, shoot my liver with a bunch of beers. So, which, you know, haha, insurance company, I just took your money and injured myself more. But at that point, isn't that a positive? Checkpoint, mate, Joe. Haha. Your Pikachu means nothing now, loser. That's right. But so, okay, so mandatory collection. Yeah, you're not going to say anything back to that. I won.
No.
So mandatory collection may be bad, but perhaps allowing me to submit myself is not.
Yeah, I think it definitely should be an opt-in kind of thing, but isn't it like offering a finger and taking a hand? Isn't it aren't they just going to start with a little bit of opt-in until it's obligatory and everybody has to do it?
Well, I mean, the same thing could be said with airlines, right? You have the global entry over here where you give an iris scan and like mm-hmm. a background check.
Yep.
And then you get through the lines faster. And so you have given up privacy in order to get convenience. And that to me is not an ethical question because they gave you a choice. And you chose to have less privacy. So that to me does not go on the side of ethics. That goes on the side of somebody offered you a choice.
So isn't that kind of the blanket topic of this podcast? Isn't it about companies being fully transparent on what they're actually giving you?
I thought it was about Pikachu.
Not anymore.
Damn it.
No, I'm over that. I understand the
Apple. Wait, explain that a little bit.
So isn't it about the companies actually being fully clear on what the security issues could be, full disclosure on when they've had this security issues? Aren't companies just not at the moment taking these responsibilities, and couldn't it help to be much more open about this?
That's a great way to look at it. Maybe, you know, well, I mean, how many people would ever buy a camera if it said, security's on you, sucker? You know, that probably isn't going to sell too well. But at the same time, yes, at that point, it does remove any ethical considerations from the company because they've had full disclosure. They don't, you know, they're not parading around saying we deliver end-to-end security. They're simply saying we deliver this functionality. We hope it does the best. I mean, of course, they're not going to say that, but there is something to that where they're given choice.
Yeah, isn't it just typical that all of the techies are slightly paranoid? Like when I buy stuff, I actually turn off most cloud functionality.
I don't. You yell at me because of that. I'm not. You're more paranoid than me. I think you yelled at me about my Synology because I turned on some Quick Connect stuff and
yeah,
a few other things. Yeah. No, I mean, so I'm probably better off by having you next to me. But again, not everybody has a Chris next to them.
But isn't that
they may have Pikachu though?
Am I the canary in the coal mine, or am I just paranoid?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
No, I'm probably the canary in the coal mine, right? You're the person who's like watching me, waiting for everything to explode, and then going to run out and be like, "See, I told the canary's dead. Everybody out." Yeah. So I think we can close this. Since we're laughing, we may as well go down the other topic. That's not necessarily funny, but it is sort of comical. Where the robot mall security guard knocked over the child.
Yeah,
I mean the child was not really seriously injured, so I think I can have a little chuckle at that. But it is there was a I forget where it was. There was an article that we'll post in the show notes from The Verge that was a mall security robot knocked down a toddler on its routine, thus was it violating Asimov's first law?
Yep.
But I don't think the robot could even see her, so it was it really violating it?
I yeah. Oh, wow. Ethics question again.
If a tree falls in the forest.
If a car hits a toddler but couldn't see it, is it a problem?
Well, that's what happened. That was the Tesla death, right? I mean, that was, right. It didn't know the truck was there and it ran right into it because it didn't see it.
Yeah.
And therein lies the problem of who's to blame. The car company said it was ready. You know, Tesla said it was ready.
The driver didn't know the car couldn't see that.
Yeah, no. Well, in different countries, because I think in Europe it's mandatory that trucks have side skirts, so this wouldn't have happened. And in the U.S., this was just an unfortunate situation that went down. So, you know, if it didn't see it, yeah, is it their fault? And that would be the same. I think that's the same thing as the security cameras. In that case, it, you know, maybe they weren't prepared for that scenario. But in that case, was the car ready to be shipped? And then at the same time, Musk's response of yes, we've had this many miles of driving with only one accident, and that's better than the normal rate. You know, is everybody making a big deal out of nothing? You know, unfortunately, you know, someone's death is never nothing. But is this something that is still better for people? And ethics is actually just not something. In this case, we're just bringing it up because it happened with a new technology.
What I find the scary bit is that he knew how many miles of driving they had while they don't own those cars anymore.
Maybe, well, it was like 130 million, right? It was probably an educated guess. We hope. We should say that we know that car companies collect quite a bit of data from car owners. If you do not know this, yes, we have worked for car companies. They do collect quite a bit of data, not personal data, obviously, but, you know, how fast you're going, even things like tire pressure, I think how often brakes are applied, but the force they're applied, it's really quite astounding the amount of data that cars collect and then send back to the larger manufacturer in order to create better cars in the future.
Yeah, cars pretty much snitch on you if you've abused their engine. The mechanics know what you did.
That's the same thing with your iPhone, right? You carry it around and it tells your location and, you know, people can pick it up. And even if you didn't have location on, you're still beholden to triangulating based on cell towers. They can still get it from you. So again, it's at that point, everybody has but in that case, it seems like you have a choice and you are purposefully giving up privacy and, as some would say, freedom in order to have convenience.
Yeah.
And so in that case, does it become ethical or not? Yeah. And this is why we could go. I mean, there's so much more to talk about with Tesla. There's a lot more. I mean, there's so many articles with Pokemon Go at this point, and there's so many videos, and it's, I'm sure it won't be the, you know, probably, I don't know if this is a fad. It seems like a fad. It seems like it's growing so fast. It will be a fad. And then in a month, people, like, there'll still be a community. It was like Magic the Gathering back 20 years ago or something, where it will, you know, escalate and then de-escalate. But it seems like there's a lot of different topics, especially around security and the connected device security, what information is being sent, what information is being taken from you without your knowledge. And I think the thing that we can wrap up with, Chus, what you said earlier, which is, does all of this not go away, but does the question of ethics get managed more by companies having full disclosure? Does that then relieve them of those duties? And on the flip side, is it more of an ethical aspect if companies are not explaining what they're collecting and they are collecting and then somehow utilizing that data? I mean, whether that's a car, whether that's a, you know, my Nest, whether that's my Nest Protect, whether that's my Fitbit, you know, is that then, and that's going to an insurance company, is that then a question that needs to be managed by people better, or at least needs to be talked about on a broader level?
Yeah.
So, okay. We are good to wrap up, and I will talk to you next week. You are only allowed to play that stupid game for 8 hours in the next week. That's how we're going to open the next show. I'm going to ask you if you've played less than 8 hours.
Well, I'm going to be flying to the U.S., so I'm going to get my travel bonus there.
Can you play? You can keep playing in the U.S.? Is that okay?
Yeah.
This is so weird.
So next week, I'll be talking to you on a different microphone.
And a different location, different time zone. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, have a safe trip, and we will talk next week.
Thanks. Bye.